biographical thought. I was talking about the Nitziv's two children, and I mentioned Rav Chaim Berlin, who was supposed to take over the Volozhiner Yeshiva, and in fact, that sparked a big riot because the guys wanted Rav Chaim Soloveitchik to be the Rosh Yeshiva, and the Yeshiva Volozhin closed down anyway a half a year later. And the Maskilim like to say that the Nitziv, again, it's Mamash Lashon Hara, Matzi Shemra, but they say the Nitziv closed it down because they didn't want his son to be Rosh Yeshiva, but that's Pashat Sheker, that wasn't the case. But the Nitziv's other son, his Ben Sakunim, is very well known in this neighborhood, although not ideologically, and that is Rev Meir Berlin, who made Aliyah, and when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he Hebraicized his name to Rav Meir Bar Ilan. So I don't know if you know, if you all know this, but Rav Meir Bar Ilan was the Nitziv's youngest son. He was a big Talmud Chacham also. He was obviously a very big Zionist, the founder of Bar Ilan University, but also the Encyclopedia Talmudis, which has many Rosh Hashiva's writing. And his Kavura is actually on Bar Ilan Street in the Beis HaKvaros, in Sanhedrin, right here. So Rav Meir Bar Ilan also wrote he wrote his own autobiography called Mivolozhin Ad Yerushalayim, two volumes, but a large part of the first chelek are his zichreinus about his father and about the Volozhin Yeshiva. So that's considered to be one of the primary makoros. He was, when Volozhin closed, I mean, he was not actually a Talmud, he was younger, but he was 12 years old. But he describes in great Arichas that in Volozhin, the minhag was that all of the Talmidei Yeshiva came to the Rosh Yeshiva for the storm. So there were two storm. She's talking about hundreds and hundreds of people. And a lot of the guys didn't even want to go home, even if they could have gone home. And the Yeshiva gave them money to go home. That was the minhag in Europe. People were poor. But a lot of the Talmidim, most of the Talmidim, wanted to stay for the Rosh Hashiva's storim, and it was very magnificent. And it talked about, first of all, you got a nice matana. You know, the Nitziv has a perish on the Haggadah, very beautiful perish. And every guest at the Seder got a free Haggadah with the Nitziv's perish. So you got a matana. And it went on most of the night, and it was Mamish Higia Zman Kriyash Mashal Shachris. They would daven in the morning. And the Nitziv would say his Chidushim, but also Bachrim. Some of the Bachrim in Volozhin were so Eloyisha that they could kind of make instant gramen, instant poems or rhymes out of the Nitziv's Chidushim. So they would kind of like take the Chidushim and make, you know, gramen and this and that. They were very, very talented people. You know, it's interesting that in the earlier years of Volozhin, the Nitziv and the Beis Halevi were co-Rashi Yeshiva. Rav Chaim's father, Nitziv in the Beis Halevi, and there was a din Torah as to who would be the head Rosh Yeshiva, and the Nitziv won, the Beis Halevi lost, so the Beis Halevi left. There was a little bit of machlokes, but eventually Rav Chaim Soloveitchik married the Nitziv's granddaughter and came back as junior Rosh Yeshiva, so that kind of made shalom in the mishpacha. But the Nitziv once said as a joke, what was the difference between the Beis Halevi's Seder and the Nitziv's Seder? So he says, I have a Seder, he says, I come with simcha, every single mitzvah is a schus, etc. And I leave the Seder in a state of exaltation, a state of reimimus hanefesh. He says the Beis Halevi is very depressed after the Seder. He's not sure if he ate enough matzah. He's mesupik if the matzah might be chametz, right? Because that's also from a briskers eat. It's a modern thing. They have a very big shear for matzah, but they don't need any matzah beyond the Seder, or beyond the chiyah, because if you think about it, what is the single food on Pesach that most likely has the greatest chashash that it might be chametz? It's taka matzah. Everything else, you know, eggs, potatoes are not going to be chametz. Matzah could be chametz. So mela, you're stuck between two brisker chumras. You want to eat matzah for sure. You don't want to eat chametz for sure. So mela, they eat a big kazetzim for matzah, but they're very mitzamtzim in matzah the rest of Pesach, like they won't eat at Chol HaMoed, etc. So he says the Beis Halevi is a nervous wreck after Pesach. He says, you know, so he says that was a chiluk. Although they say another word, the Beis Halevi said, what's the difference between him and his son Rav Chaim? The Beis Levi said, very, very, very beautiful. It says, someone asks me a gevaldik akasha, and I give a gevaldik teretz. So he says, the one who asks the kasha is so happy, he asked a gevaldik akasha, and I gave a gevaldik teretz. So everyone's happy. He says, someone asks my son Rav Chaim akasha. Rav Chaim shows him, if you really think about it deeply, there's no kasha to begin with. So there's no kasha and there's nothing to be answered. So nobody's happy. You know, no kasha, no teretz. He says, my son takes away the simcha from a kasha and a teretz. Okay. This was the Nesiv and Rav Meir Bar Ilan. Now, I want to point out that Volozhin, because Volozhin in particular attracted really the brightest, the smartest, the brightest kids throughout Bukharim, throughout Europe. So it was a hotbed of a lot of different ideals. Volozhin was not a strongly supervised yeshiva. We're going to see the concept of a mashgiach was actually added after Volozhin closed, Slobodka and the like. That's kind of second generation. The initial idea of Volozhin was a very independent place. The concept was like Lakewood in a way. You know, you're old enough to learn on your own. We're not here to watch what you're doing. And in fact, the reason why a mashgiach was introduced was because of some of the negatives that went on in Volozhin. That a lot of different things went on in Volozhin. There was, Haskalah did penetrate Volozhin a lot. In fact, the famous poets, Chaim Nachman Bialik. You guys have heard of Bialik. Bialik was, many consider him, in Hebrew literature, they consider him the greatest of the modern Hebrew poets. He was totally not religious, but in his youth, he was a Talmud in Volozhin. And he was an example of being caught up in the Haskalah and actually leaving Torah. But nevertheless, he always had a place in his heart where he felt a certain sadness at leaving. Some of his poems are about Ben Torah learning Torah, and Yom Valayla, etc. And that's what they say. They say that one of the things that a yeshiva does is learning in a yeshiva does not guarantee that you'll remain a Ben Torah. But it does guarantee that if you don't remain a Ben Torah, you're not going to enjoy it. So that's what they say. So that's what they say. That, you know, it takes away the hanoah of chait, even if it doesn't stop you from the actual chait itself. And you actually see that. You actually see that in Bialik's poems. There's a certain, at least, nostalgia for the life of what that represented. Zionism was kind of very, very widespread in Volozhin, even communism. Some of these ideas of communism were percolating after Karl Marx and the like. Now, the Netziv himself did identify with a lot of aspects of Zionism. Now, you have to know that, what we'll talk about tonight, I'm not going to talk about Zionism, the Arichas, but shortly after, Herzl began advocating the idea of a political Zionism, there was a group of Rabbanim who organized a movement called Chevevei Tzion, those who loved Tzion, which was a Frum movement. That was the forerunner of Mizrahi, which technically was a Frum religious Zionist. And the Netziv was very involved in urging Yidden to move to Eretz Yisrael, and in particular encouraging agricultural cultivation, that Jews should buy fields and they should plant and the like. And therefore, in Volozhin, the idea of Zionism was accepted in a lot of ways. Rav Chaim was against it. Rav Chaim was a great kanoi against it, and Rav Chaim had chiluk ideas with the Netziv. So they even tell the story that when Rav Chaim got word, I don't know how he did this over the Netziv, but when Rav Chaim got word that there were Zionist bachurim in the yeshiva who were involved in Zionist activities, Rav Chaim was dairish v'chaiker to find out who they were. But he couldn't find out. Somehow everybody was sworn to secrecy. He finally got one of his talmidim, and he said, you know who they are. Who are they? And the Talmud said to the Rebbe, I made a shvua chamura. I made a shvua not to be magala. So how can I be over on the shvua? So Rav Chaim said, this is nishba levato as a mitzvah. The same way if you make a shvua not to put on tefillin or a shvua to eat chazer, it's not chal. He says, this shvua is not chal. Rav Chaim said, it mamish is a shvua keneged the Torah to protect the Zionist bachrim. And he was magala, and Rav Chaim expelled him. Now, again, I don't know exactly how that worked with the Netziv, but Volozhin had a lot of different things going on, because the overall philosophy of Volozhin was not to have strong hashgacha on the Bachrim. The Bachrim were said to, you're on your own. And that's why, in spite of the fact that Volozhin had gedolim of the caliber of Rav Chaim and the Netziv, the shir in Volozhin was not the major thing. In other words, you went and you didn't go, the main thing was your Seder Alimut, and the shir was there if you wanted, but it wasn't like you're preparing to hear a shir, because it was thought that each person could make his own Seder, make his own Kavias. It wasn't a big deal that way. The other thing unique about Volozhin, well, many things are unique about Volozhin, is that from the days of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, the Kol Torah never stopped. There was always it was makubal in the yeshiva that people would be learning in the yeshiva 24 hours a day. Not everybody, but there would always be somebody in the Beis Medrash. And on times like Motzei Yom Kippur or Motzei Tisha B'Av or whatever it is, it would often be the Rosh Yeshiva himself who would stay for an extra half an hour or an hour while the guys were eating or whatever it is, so that the Kol Torah would never be nifsak. The Netziv lived in the yeshiva itself. The Netziv's house was physically connected to the Beis Medrash. And he would often come in the middle of, any time, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, he would pop in, as it were, just to kind of see and experience the Kol Torah and the like. So there was a very, very strong kesher between the Bachrim and the Rosh Yeshiva. And the other thing about Volozhin is there was no yeshivish cycle. As we know it, the yeshivish cycle was shas. You started, Volozhin had an 11-year cycle, so it wasn't dafyomi, a little slower than dafyomi. You would come in, you started from daf beis of brachos, and if you stuck with the cycle, not everybody stuck with the cycle, just like, people were learning different things, but the official yeshiva cycle was brachos to nida. So if you stayed in Volozhin for 11 years, you walked away hearing shiurim on all of Shas. And you see that's why the Netziv shiurim in particular, in the Merome Sadeh, tend to be short Torahs. If you think about it, because the Netziv, these are the things the Netziv said in his shir. If you're giving a shir on all of Shas, and you're covering a relatively rapid pace, you don't give long maharachos. They tend to be short Torahs on the daf. Now, that wasn't Rav Chaim's derech per se, which is why Rav Chaim sometimes either didn't give shir, or Rav Chaim skipped shir, or Rav Chaim gave a 15-minute shir, whatever. Rav Chaim, that wasn't the cycle that was so masugal for Rav Chaim, but the Netziv carried the water, so to speak, to be sure that they kept the pace always. So Volozhin was very, very unique in that way. Now, Volozhin did close. Yeah.
Why would the Netziv allow Rav Chaim to become
Why did he? Well, because Rav Chaim was very well. What can I say? Rav Chaim was very, very, very unique. Rav Chaim was yes. Well, first of all, that's part of the Netziv's godless. I mean, the idea is the Netziv was very tolerant of a lot of things, including being tolerant of Kanos. In other words, in the same way he was tolerant of Zionism, he was tolerant of Kanos. Rav Chaim was a much bigger Kanoi, even on the secular studies. Hagam, that some say the Netziv was willing to introduce secular studies, and that's a machlokas, how to learn the Netziv. But in Rav Chaim, it's a davar pashut. He was mamish misnaget. So in Rav Chaim, you can't have any machlokas. But Rav Chaim married the Netziv's granddaughter. Yes, that's correct. Of course, that's one way of getting in. But Rav Chaim Bichlal was an extremely interesting personality. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said that, it's not for us to rate, but he rated of a door of Gedalim, Rav Meir Simcha, the Rogatchover, Mamish, great, great Gedalim. He rated two Gedalim as above everybody. And one gadol is Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. The other gadol you probably never even heard of, because it's very amazing how little he's known today. But Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said he was with Rav Chaim. And this was Rav David Friedman, who was the Rav of Karlin, the Karlina Rav, Rav David Karlina. And many thought, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, that this was another Vilna Gaon. That's how Rav David Karlina was Nechshev. He was actually 25 years older than Rav Chaim. He was never a Rosh Yeshiva. He was the Rav of Karlin. And he does have svarim, She'ilas David, Piskei Halachos. They're not learned that much. Rav Shach is a whole maisa, also a klala type of story, or whatever it is. But it really is a pella that of a door of such great gedolim, Rav Chaim and Rav David Karlina, he ranked as the greatest of the of the great. Yeah.
Why do you think his books are not studied?
Say again.
Why do you think his books are not read or studied?
It's really a bit of a mystery based on the description of his godless. Rav Shach has a maisa. It's kind of a crazy maisa that they say a similar story about the Malbim, that Rav David Karlina. Oh, okay. This is the story. These stories are kind of crazy stories. The story was, those of you who learned Bava Basra, you've heard of the Nachlas Stavit. The Nachlas Stavit is a very, very chashuv sefer on the Bavas. And Nachlas Stavit was a Talmud of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. He was a Talmud of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. And the Nachlas Stavit was also a stutterer. He had a problem sometimes on stuttering. And he was once giving a shir, and the Maskilim wanted to discredit him. So they took this little Eloy, Rav David Karlina, who was like a 10-year-old kid, who's a genius, and they said, why don't you start asking this rabbi when he starts talking, asking him all your kashas. And apparently the story goes, Rav David Karlina was a kid, he was 8 years old, so he didn't know, he just thought it was a game, he would ask kashas and stiras, and apparently he schlugged up of Nachlas David or something, or at least he was mavalbul the Nachlas David. And Rav Shach says, he thinks it was a gezeira min hashamayim that Rav David Karlina's svarim would not be so makubal because of the bizayim to the nachal. I don't know. I really have no idea.
20, 13.
Yeah, I understand. So you don't get kares. You know, but first of all, just like if Rivka at 3 could do all the stuff with the wells, so Rav David Karlina at 8 might be judged as like a 20. But it is a pella because it's amazing. I mean, many people in yeshiva have never heard of Rav David Karlina. I mean, and we certainly don't run around the Beis Medrash looking at Rav David Karlina's chidushim, and yet Rav Yaakov is meyed that this was the biggest. This was the biggest of the big, on a rank of Rav Chaim, and he was older than Rav Chaim as well. Also, very, very short man, shorter than the Chafetz Chaim, Rav David Karlina, mamish tiny. Rav Shach also connects that because the Nachlas David said, "Little one, you shouldn't argue with someone who's much older." Everybody took it as a kilolas chacham that he would be short. Okay. So Pirkei Avos says, "Be very careful. Do not get burnt with the gachelet, the coal of a chacham." Yeah. But Rav Chaim, Rav Yaakov has many, many stories about Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim, you know, he says, Rav Chaim, you know, you've seen pictures of Rav Chaim wore glasses. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, Rav Chaim didn't need glasses. He actually didn't need glasses. But his eyes were so awe-inspiring. His eyes, like, were big and bulged out and piercing that he, like, Moshe Rabbeinu had to put a masveh, a cover on his head, that Rav Chaim had to put glasses because the eyes would scare people. You know, and the like. So, Rav Chaim was a very unusual, very, very unusual person. In Amkus, there was no one like him, and so you couldn't deny Rav Chaim a position as Rosh Yeshiva Volozhin. I mean, he was very great. Although there's a very cute mice about the Netziv Sasmada, that the Netziv was already an old man, and he noticed one sukkis. You know, in Europe, lulav and esrog were not common. That's why the idea of one lulav and esrog for the whole shtut. So Rav Chaim used to bench on the Netziv's lulav and esrog. So the story goes that one year he saw Rav Chaim didn't want to bench on the Netziv's lulav and esrog, and the Netziv wanted to know why, and it turned out because Rav Chaim felt that since it's Peirush Shemitah, it came from Eretz Yisrael on Shemitah, so there's a shaila because there's an issur of exporting Peirush, there's an issur of buying Schaira in Peirush Shavuos. So Rav Chaim didn't want to make a bracha. So the Netziv said, no problem, no shaila. And the Netziv went through the whole night being mavira the shaila with all the makairis. So at 4 o'clock in the morning, he sent the shaliach to Rav Chaim's house to tell Rav Chaim to come because he wants to show him the sukkah. So Rav Chaim didn't know if he gets summoned. He doesn't know if the Netziv is sick or whatever it is. So he runs as fast as he can. And he says, I hope there's nothing wrong with the Zaydi. He says, no, I want to go over the sugi with you. So Rav Chaim says, okay, just give me a minute. I have to make Birchas HaTorah. So it says the Nitziv started crying. He says, I never thought my granddaughter would marry somebody who has to make Birchas HaTorah 4 o'clock in the morning. He says, what's the pshat? You went to sleep without being mavar? He says, what's the pshat? So Rav Chaim used to tell that story about the Hasmada of the Nitziv. Someone asked the Nitziv if he learned 20 hours a day. So the Nitziv says he wasn't such a masmid. He only learned 16 hours a day, he said. But he did 16 hours a day for 25 years straight. Because he didn't become a Rashi. He entered Volozhin at 11 or whatever it is. He got married very, very young. And he was not a Rosh Hashiva until he was 35. So he says, for 25 years straight, he learned 16 hours a day, whether it was Erev Shabbos, Yom Kippur, except on Tisha B'Av. He couldn't get in all those hours. And he said, I'm not such a big masman, it was just 16 hours a day, but 25 years straight. So we have the formula, gentlemen. How do you become the Nitziv? Because it's also said, although I'm not sure if it's Emes. I have a lot of problems with this Maisa, but it's Mekubal in the Velt that the Nitziv as a child was not a genius. He was not a Baal Kishra. And many people didn't think the Nitziv would amount to a big Talmud Chacham. And people point to him as an example of the Kayach of Hasmada, giving a person all of this godless. The reason I have a big problem with this is the following. The Nitziv married into the family of Rav Chaim Volozhin at the age of 11 or 12. I mean, why did they take him? I mean, why would they take him as a young kid unless he had shown some unusual godless? Which one? Yes, yes, that's correct. That's correct.
He was like 6 at that time of the story.
6, 11, oh, okay, all right. So you
no, he was 5 at the time of the story, so by 11. Like,
maybe by 11 already he was, okay.
So
Isn't the Maisa going to send him away?
Yes, that's the Maisa he's referring to, that his parents were discussing of apprenticing him to a shoemaker. This is what the Nitziv said. You know, the Nitziv's first published sefer is on an unusual mitzvah. It's on a sefer called the She'iltas to Rav Achai Gaon. This is the She'iltas was written by one of the Gaonim, and it's a sefer of halacha based on the Parshios. And the Nitziv wrote a perish on the She'iltas, which brings in, of course, all the Gemaras, all the Rishonim, everything else. This is called the Hamik Shela. And it says when the Nitziv finished the Hamik Shela, he made a big, big seal, especially great simcha. And he said, now I know at least I have a partial teretz min hashamayim, because when I was whatever age, young, a little kid, my parents were discussing, I wasn't matzliach in learning, and they thought they would apprentice me to a shoemaker. And what would have happened if I would have become a shoemaker? So he said like this, he said, I would have been a frum shoemaker, I would have been erlich, I would have learned every day, I would have gone to an Ein Yaakov shir, and I would have gone through my whole life thinking I'm serving Hashem properly. Then after Mea V'Yesrim Shana, I go before the Kisei HaKavot, and all of a sudden the Midas HaDin shows me Hamik Shaila. Where is this sefer you could have written? And I said, what do you mean I could have written? I was a shoemaker. What did you expect? He says, no, you had it within you. So he says, now that I did the sefer, L'chol HaPachas, I know I have one thing I can tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I did that I was supposed to do. A person never knows their potential. Right, so this is the famous Maisa. But as I say, they say it also by Rav Elchanan Vassman. Those are the two Gedolim. But I don't know. I don't know if it's true. Sometimes people exaggerate. You know, I'll give you an example apropos of nothing, but an example of a tremendous guzma which people have shown is wrong. The Tiferes Yisrael brings a medrash about Moshe Rabbeinu. That when Moshe Rabbeinu, Paro initially didn't know that Moshe, this guy that's stirring up Geula, was the one who grew up in his house. So he hears about this Moshe that's going around telling people Hashem is going to redeem you. And he believes in what's physiognomy, that's the shape of the skull, that you can tell from a person's face what type of personality he has. So he asked his artists to draw him a picture of Moshe Rabbeinu so he could have a sense of what type of person he is. So when he looks at the face of Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, this can't be. This is not a tzaddik. This is the face of a coarse person, an unrefined person, a person of bad midos. It's not shayach that he could be the Moshiach Shel Yisrael. And he asked Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe says, "This can't. How can you do all these things?" This is a Tzvi Zal brings it as a medrash, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Yes, that is my teva. My teva was coarse and not refined, but I worked on myself and I perfected myself through Aliyah and Aveda, and that brought me to these madrigas." This is a medrash that Tzvi Zal brings. Now, well, number one, people have said they have not been able to find this medrash. There's no medrash that anyone is aware of. Number two, they even trace it to a German folktale. It may not even be from Chazal. And number three, I don't want to say kfir because we throw around kfir too much, but many say that it's really connected Mesira to assume that Moshe Rabbeinu was not born with an elevated neshama, because we find Chazal say that ki tov, that when he was born, the whole bias was filled with light, and in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu was nailad mahul. He was nailad without the need for a bris, as a siman of his kedusha yisera. So many people say that the Tiferes Yisrael may have been led astray, because again, this is another product of Haskalah. Haskalah has all sorts of things that fall in which they took sometimes folk tales and they wrote them over in Hebrew and they combined them with midrashim. They would say Jewish folklore. So some of the stuff were midrashim, and some of the stuff were maisim, and some of the stuff were bava maisim, and some of the stuff were folk tales. So a person could read the book, and he doesn't know, am I reading Chazal, am I reading this and that? So some want to say that the Tiferes Yisrael was looking at one of these books. He thought it was a medrash, and it turned out to be a folk tale. You know, so we don't know a lot of these things. And that's why in the newer Israeli Tiferes Yisrael Mishnayos, they take out the story. Again, censorship. Whether you defend it or not, you know, it's a controversial thing because it is in the Tiferes Yisrael Sefer, but they took it out. The new publishers take out the story.
Is it possible also that maybe sending it past some midrashim is also some midrashim?
It could be. It could be. There's no question that many midrashim are lost. The Rishonim bring midrashim that we cannot find.
There are some that we have now distorted.
That's true also.
Yeah.
In other words, the midrashim that we have, probably not. And that we believe. I mean, the most we can say is things got lost. I think that we believe whatever was preserved by Messiah. That already is. It's much easier to say that we lost things than to say what we have got distorted.
You could have lost such a midrash with the Tiferes Yisrael.
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, even the Alkit Shemaini is not a medrash. The Alkit Shemaini is a collection of midrashim. So everything in the Alkit is from the Gemara, from the Rabbah, from the Tanchuma, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. In other words, the Alkit is not an original medrash. And yet, you find in the Alkit midrashim that we don't have anywhere else, and that could only be because there were chalakim of midrashim that got lost. Because the Alkut didn't make any new midrashim itself, so you'll find sometimes even in the Bavli, I don't think, well, the Bavli we seem not to have lost things, but in the Yerushalmi for sure, the Rambam writes that there is a Yerushalmi on Seder Taharas. Oh, I'm sorry, on Seder Kutchin, not on Taharas. We do not have a Yerushalmi on Seder Kutchin. It got lost. I think I may have told you, I don't want to repeat all the mice that I told you already, but there was we actually had around 100 years ago, there was a fellow who claimed to have discovered a Yerushalmi on Kutchim, on Chulin and Bechiris. And he actually got haskamas from many Gedolim, an amazing thing, the long lost Yerushalmi on Kutchim. And he published the Yerushalmi on Kutchim, and he even wrote a Perish like Rashi, and he wrote a thing on Haoris like Taisvas. And this was Gevaldik, Chulin and Bechiris. Yerushalmi on Kutchim. It turned out he literally made it up. He forged a Gemara. Now you got to be pretty learned to forge a Gemara, and especially a Yerushalmi, because you have to know the Lushan of the Yerushalmi, the style of the Yerushalmi, etc. And he mamish made up things. Now they say the one that uncovered the plot was the Rugachever. The Rugachever had such an enormous bakias. The Rugachever was able to prove it, but they also say that the guy gave himself away because he told somebody. You know, it's like, you know, the Ketzayis HaChayshin writes in his Hakdama, the Ketzayis writes that even if a person has the greatest simcha in life, if there's nobody that he can share it with, the simcha is not complete. So, you pull off this feat of the century, you know, you fool like all the G'dayli Hador, who are you going to tell? You know, but what happens is you tell one person, you know, so it gets out.
It's possible to get nowadays.
Yes, it is. It is. They don't reprint it. They haven't reprinted it. But I bet you the yeshiva might have it somewhere, in one of the hidden rooms here.
She will have it. Some people still learn it.
No. Nobody learns it. But it's a biblia. But if you're a swarm collector, it's a mitzia to have a little bit. Now the truth of the matter is, I mean, there's probably some valid Torah in it. Not everything is made up. I mean, a lot of the way, if you wanted to forge a Gemara, a lot of the way you forge it is you take the sheetas that are in the Bavli, Rav Yochanan, Rish Lakish. I mean, you know, you kind of do it that way. You know, so there's probably, and then when you're mafalpal, so mistama, there's another example of a forgery, which is sometimes is used, is there's a shelus uchuvus besamim rosh. Besamim rosh is said to be chuvus from Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel, who is known as the Rush. The Rush lived in the 1200s. Now we have chuvus harush, we have that. And Besamim Rosh, which was published in the 1700s, the late 18th century, is said to be newly discovered Shuvas of the Rush. That's a Choshev thing, Shuvas of the Rush. But it turned out it was made up by a fellow, Rav Scholl of Berlin, who was a Moscow, actually, also a scholar. They did a lot of different shtick. And it's Yadua that it's a forgery. But nevertheless, because it is written b'derech masu matan shel halacha, so knowing it's a forgery, people still look at it because he makes svaras and arguments. In other words, it's still a sefer. So some people say, what do you mean? You're learning the Torah of a ganef? You're learning the Torah of a liar? I mean, what's the pshat? So some people say there is bedafka, no inyan at all, to look at it. Others are miyachas to it, like a sefer of halacha. They look at it. Rav Avadja, in a lot of his chuvas, brings the Besamim Reish, and he'll say in a footnote, I know, don't tell me, I know, this is Mezuyev, I know, but nevertheless, I'll give you one example.
How can he use the Sefer?
No, because here is the point. I mean, what does the Sefer do? The Sefer has a Shaila, and the Sefer says, from the Gemara, it's Mashma this way, and from Rashi, it's this way, and Taisa, in other words, he's Mefalpel. So, good, the guy is a chakran in terms of who wrote it. But Afilu Hachi, you know, he has Tainus. In other words, Rav Avadja says, why can't I look at the Tainus? It's like somebody walks into the Beis Medrash, who's maybe not a tzaddik, but he has good kashas and good terutzim. You know, so. Well, okay, all right. That's a tiny. But let me give you one example. Of where you can see it. Like, you might ask, why would a maskil be interested in forging a sefer of shelus and shuvas? Like, what exactly? Like, you know, what's the point? Yeah, but I'll give you an example. In one of the shuvas, there's a famous discussion. If somebody is suffering tremendous yisurin, suffering, are they allowed to take their own life? So in the Besamim Rosh, there's a psak that a person who is suffering is permitted to commit suicide. Now that's what you might call a modernisha idea, a progressive idea, what we call today the right to death with dignity, etc. That's keneged halacha. But you see that the Besamim Rosh tried to push certain leniencies in halacha by being meyachasit to the Rosh. If the Rosh would have said it, that would have had tremendous validity. If some Rosh says it, it's not mekubal lahalacha, although he tries to bring rayas from Shoal committing suicide, you know, whatever. See, but that's a famous tshuva, martyring suicides in the Pesamim Rosh.
How was it discovered?
How was the forgery? I don't remember. I can go back and check. But it's these things are never 100%. Actually, they're never 100%. But it's so mekubal that it's a forgery. We even know the guy who did it. I'll go back and check exactly how it was.
About the Eidu was discovered 100 years ago or so?
Yeah.
How do we know if this is good?
Well, that's already a difficult issue. You know, Meiri, a lot of Rishonim were actually published 100 years ago. A lot of the Rambans were published. I mean, Ramban, Rashba, You'd be amazed if you go back. If you ask yourself what Rishonim were in the Voloshiner Yeshiva, they had much, much less than we have. But the way they do it, you know, they never know for sure. But the way they do it is they primarily compare what we have. If we find a manuscript that says it's from the Ramban, so we compare it to the Ramban that's brought down in the Shita Mekubetzetz. We compare it to other things. In other words, the manuscripts are checked for consistency with what is brought in the Beis Yosef, what is brought in the Bach, etc. And that's kind of how you determine. In fact, it's because I wouldn't spend a lot of time on this, but if you ever take, let's say, the new Ritvas, the new Rashbas, the new Rans, all the new stuff, and look at the introduction, the Hakdama of the guys that write the footnotes. Actually, some of these are really, you know, it's funny. The original footnotes were just very short. Now they write pilpulim. I mean, it's almost as if the guys that do the footnotes really want to write their own sefer on the Maseches, but you know they don't have the money for their own sefer. But this way, they're working for Mossad Rav Kook. So in being Magia or Ramban or Iran, they get a chance to write pages and pages of their chidushim. But it's really, because otherwise, you know, because it's expensive to publish your own sefer. But if you're doing it as notes, in other words, it's on most of Rav Kook's money when it's the Ramban or the Rashba or the Ritva. If you're doing your own, it's going to be your money, you know. So it's a good way of doing it that way. But if you look at the Hakdamas are useful, so you can actually see, like, how do we know we find a manuscript, like. How do we know it's the Ramban or whatever it is? And then they'll show you. They compared it to this and that, and the Shita, and then the Beis Yosef, and they'll show you like the. So the Meiri was the same thing. Now, Lemaise, it's interesting that the Chazei Nish had a famous Shita, because the problem is when you start finding all these manuscripts. Okay, putting aside Ziyaf, that's one issue. Even if you know it's from the Meiri, but sometimes you see new Shitas. Should it change the halacha, right? Should it change the halacha if you see a new sheet in the Rishonim? So the Chazei Nish was very misnaget to changing any halacha based on newly discovered Rishonim. And in fact, he was not even such a fan of learning newly discovered Rishonim, because he had a shita that it had not been a chelik of the Mesorah for hundreds and hundreds of years. And he says, there must be a hashgacha pratis why something was nignas, even if it's from the Rishonim. Why did it disappear for hundreds and hundreds of years? So the Chazei Nish had kind of a mystical idea that even what was nignas is al pi hashgacha, and therefore it shouldn't bedavka become a chelik of the Mesorah. I'm not. Why was it revealed?
It wasn't revealed.
Same deal.
That's a good kasha. But at least lagabe psak halacha, he tainas that if in the time of the Beis Yosef, in the time of the Torah, you know, they didn't have it, so the mele that wasn't. The hashgacha part of the halachic process.
The Rashba wasn't
the time. The Rashba, you said? I'm not sure. I was throwing out the names as a mix, but just in terms of timelines, let me give you the approximate timeline.
The Rashba, recently.
The Ramban. A lot of the Ramban's chidushim were found recently. When I say recently, I'm talking about, let's say, 120 years ago.
The Rashba was around.
The Rashba was around. The Rashba, okay. Ramban's Talmud Muvak was the Rashba. The Rashba's Talmud Muvak was the Ritva. The Ran was a Talmud of the Ritva. So let's just take four Rishonim. We can do 1,000 Rishonim. But let's take what you might call the big four. Right? The most common Rishonim on the Masechtas are, we say, is the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva, and the Ran. And this is essentially four consecutive generations. So they were the 12 and 1300s. All of them were in Spain. All of them were in Spain. Barcelona in particular. Now, they were Sephardic, we call them. We call them Sephardic. Now, the Rush was Ashkenazic. The Rush was from Germany. But after the Crusades, the Rush did come to Spain. So the Rush and the Rashba were contemporaries. In fact, when the Rush came to Spain, he was not known by anybody, but the Rashba knew who the Rush was. and the Rashba made the Rush the Av Beis Din of the Beis Din in Barcelona, and that's why the Rush was considered to be a Baki in both Minhagei Ashkenaz and Minhagei Sfarad, because the Rush went from Germany to Spain, and the Rush's son, or one of the Rush's sons, was the Tur, Rav Yaakov Balaturim, who wrote the Tur, which was the first big sefer that was Maasef. It gathered all the different shitos of Ashkenazim and Sfardim in Halacha. And the Shulchan Aruch was a really a kitzer of the Tur and the Beis Yosef. Right? So that was the next. The Tur was it would be around the time. It was after the Ritva, but it would be around the time of the Ritva, yeah. Yeah, this is the Tur. So that's that. In fact, the two pivotal figures who united Ashkenaz and Sfarad, first was the Ramban. The Ramban was actually the first. The Ramban brought the Derech of the Balei HaTaisus into Spain. I don't know how he did it exactly, because he didn't go, he never went to France, but he brought that Derech. And the second one was the Rush, who himself went from Germany to Spain and was able to be Mechaber those Derechim of learning. Okay? But as I say, a lot of these Chidushim were not available. I mean, the Shita Mekubetzes we've had since the 1500s, and that was a major source of all the Rishayim. But we didn't have like Chidushi Aramban. Rashba we had. The Rashba has been around a long time. For some reason, the Rashba's writings did survive mamish from the time of the Rashba. But the other ones, the Ritva and the Ramban, are really from the 19th century. And the Meiri is even later than that. And even now, even today, new Rishayim get published all the time. Yeah.
Rishayim write all of their own Sfarim?
Not always. In fact, even... even within Rashi and the Rashban, you sometimes see beferish that Talmidim wrote them down. So it's not always the case.
So the question would be, if you have, let's say, a Rashba quotes a Ramban,
yeah,
a beferish and the Ramban different, so there's not really a source to say that what's in the Ramban is necessarily more the Ramban than what the Rashba says, because he was his Talmud. It could be that another Talmud wrote down the Ramban differently.
That's correct. That's correct. That is absolutely correct. By the way, you'll also see the following. If you look, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, one of his Sfarim on Yevamos, is called Kovei Tzaharis. Since you guys don't do Yevamos, maybe you never see this ever, but it's Kovei Tzaharis. So in the Hakdama to Kovei Tzaharis, Rav Elchanan has a page called Yedios Nichbades, Important Things to Know, in which he points out that a lot of times... what is identified as one Rishon Sefer is actually another Rishon. So, for example, the Rashba on Sukkah is actually the Ritva, even though it got published as the Rashba. The Ramban on certain Masechtas is actually the Rashba, right? So sometimes, for whatever reason, it got semished. And therefore, you have to know this. So, if there's a stira between the Rashba and Bava Kamma and the Rashba and Sukkah, it's not really a stira because the Rashba and Sukkah is the Ritva. Right, so you have things like that.
I didn't know that.
Well, we know it from things like the Chidah. The Chidah gave a lot of Edus. You know, the Chidah lived in the 1700s, and he was a great expert. He was a great gadol, but he was also a great expert in manuscripts and Sfarim. And he said that some of the early printers messed up in misidentification of manuscripts. So the Chidah has a lot of information about that. Yeah.
They also do write Talmidim, because I know sometimes the church...
You're saying what? That there were goyim who were in printers for sure, because you know now with computer, it's easy to print things on computer. But you know the old style printing, which they come out don't do today at all, is you have to set the Gutenberg movable type. So you have to make metal letters. And then you have to be masader the letters and the like. And you had people who did this, they didn't even know Hebrew. They were just like trying to compare. In other words, they were just trying to make copies of letters. So sometimes letters were not arranged properly and the words were makolkol. And there were goyim that were involved. The other thing to know is that there is censorship in Gemaras. The Catholic Church did have censors in a lot of printing places to take off anything about Yashka and the like. And one of the rarest books, very rare book, if you have this you can get a lot of money for it, is the Catholic Church actually issued a censorship manual to its printers telling them what should be taken out. And some of it was shtus, some of it was mamash shtus v'hevel, it was just automatic pilot. I'll give you an example. Although this makes no sense to me, but the Catholic Church wanted to censor the word Talmud. Since they didn't like the Talmud, they wanted the word Talmud to be taken out of the Talmud. Which makes no sense, meaning even if you're printing a Gemara, you got to take out the word Talmud whenever it appears. Which, you know, makes no sense to me at all. But that is why, you know, the famous Maimer Chazal in Maseches Sukkah, Sichas Chulin Sericha Talmud, which has nothing to do with Talmud as Gemara, it just means the casual conversation of the Talmud Chacham you can learn from. So some Girsos have it, Sichas Chulin Sericha Limud. Other Girsos are Sichas Chulin Sericha Talmud. It means the same thing. But the historical Hishtalshulis is that some censor who didn't know what he was doing, but he had this manual that says whenever you see the word Talmud, you got to take it out. So we got to change Talmud to Limud. Right? So the original Girsa was Talmud. Other things is, a lot of times the Gemara will say Kusi when it doesn't mean Kusi. Kusim were the Samaritans, who you know. It means Goy, or Oved Kochavim. But the Catholic Church was sometimes offended by the word Oved Kochavim, and they wanted to have it substituted with the Kusi that was kind of an extinct people that weren't around. Now, sometimes Kusim means Kusim Taka. Many sugyas are about the Kusim. But sometimes Kusi just means a Goy. And once again, that's censorship. Especially in Maseches Avodah Zarah, as you might expect, which does deal with Christianity and other paganism, the censorship was very, very great. Now, in Amsterdam, there was a protest against the censorship. And what they did was, they printed the Gemaras with blank lines where the church censored it. In other words, so if you'd open up a Gemara, instead of just taking things out, they took things out but left big blank spaces in the middle of the daf so that everybody would look and say, oh, this was taken out, and the like. But in the newer shasas, in the Oz V'Hadar, even in the Art Scroll, they publish the stuff that was taken out. And we also have svarim, pamphlets, chasrona, sashas, that indicate things that were taken out of not only the Gemara, but also Rashi, Taisus, the Marsha, and the like. Even in Nach, the Radak. The Radak is one of the great Meforshim. He was a Rishon, time of the Ramban, one of the great Meforshim on Nach. And the Radak in Tehillim, and actually not just in Yeshayahu, in all throughout Nanach, you know, often deals with how the Christians have distorted Psukim, and he says how we will explain them. So most of those things in the Radak were taken out of the Radak. So in the newer Radaks, they put it back in. See, but a lot of the Radak's commentary was censored because he dealt with Christian misinterpretations of biblical Psukim. Yeah.
Once that a Rebbe who quoted a Sefer, Toldos Yeshu.
Toldos Yeshu, that's an interesting one, yeah.
And whatever, to try to prove a certain Indian that a lot of the original Christians were Tanaim. They said they were Tanaim, were trying to change Christianity so it wouldn't be like Yiddishkeit, so that way people wouldn't marry and make mistakes. Is that Sefer like Mekubal?
Yeah. So Toldos Yeshu is an interesting Sefer. Toldos Yeshu dates from the 1200s, so it's not from Chazal. And Toldos Yeshu, it's a machlokas, whether it does represent Chazal's view of the history of the time, or whether it's a bit of a late sonus. Some look at it as just an attempt to be very degrading. It portrays Yashkin in a very, very negative light, and some say it's even B'derech Guzma. So Toldos Yeshu is lav dafka considered a historical source. It's more of a late sonus source. But there is very definitely a shita in Chazal that, you know, the inventor of Christianity is not Yashka. The inventor of Christianity is Paul. Paul actually never met Yashka. Paul became a convert, so to speak, after Yashka's death, but he claimed to have seen him b'chalayim or whatever it is. Now, Paul's chiddush. Paul had a chiddush. I don't want to give you long drushes on Paul's theology. That's a big mitzvah in Christianity. But Paul had a big chiddush because the very early Christians believed Yashka was Mashiach, but you still had to keep the mitzvahs, Bris Milah, Kashrus, Shabbos. Paul was mechadesh that this new bris, this new covenant, your patur min ha-mitzvahs. That was really Paul's chiddush. Now, there is a shita that says Paul was l'shem shamayim mechavin. Because as long as the Christians were still keeping mitzvahs, and they looked at themselves as Jews, there would be a big, big sakana. Just like Jews for Jesus today. There would be a big sakana that Yidden would be nimshach. Paul, they say, was on the shlichus of the Sanhedrin. That Paul's job was to separate Christianity from Judaism. So it would no longer be a source of being mafata people. So they actually say that Paul's chiddush to abrogate the mitzvahs was l'shem shamayim, so that Christianity would separate from Judaism. So there is such a mahalach that way. Yeah. Some say it's not true. You know, I can't say. But yeah.
I heard that he had like a vision that Michel came to him and told him. To do.
Yeah, well, that would be from that.
You see, that's another version.
So. Yeah, that's a version of that. Though in the Christian Bible, of course, the vision he had was Yashka. Different, but again, as they say, part of that is
now.
Yeah, they're all again. All the apostles, the Talmidim of Yashka, were Jewish. Yashka was Jewish. I mean, certainly they were Jewish. You weren't born just like you know the first Hasidim weren't born into Hasidish families. they were born as non-Hasidim by definition. But on the other hand, Paul was the first one that was Megayer Goyim. That's also true. I mean, not Megayer. I mean, he brought them. Let me put it this way. He made pagans Christians. In other words, he was the one who made non-Jews come to Christianity. Until Paul, the only Christians were people who were born Jews. They were Jewish people who believed in Yashka as Mashiach or whatever it was.
Who says this? Yeah.
So this is brought in this Sefer Toldos Yeshu, which circulated in the Middle Ages, and it became a shita that some were makabel. But again, I mean, it's not a chazal. It's not a statement in chazal, for sure. So you have to be careful. I mean, what somebody writes in the Middle Ages, if it's not from a recognized Rishon. In fact, the author of Toldos Yeshu was anonymous, by the way. We don't know who it is. So every Maisa that may circulate, even if it's in the 1200s, doesn't mean it becomes Emes Li'amitai Shel Torah. But there was such a Shita. I'll tell you another crazy thing. The Apostle Peter, who was the first Pope, the first Bishop of Rome, was Peter. And Peter actually had the Shita that you have to keep mitzvahs. A Christian keeps mitzvahs. He's actually a Jew. They bring down a statement that Peter, whose original name was Simon, because Peter is Petra, rock, he was called Kippa. Shimon Kippa is Simon the rock, which is Peter, is the Mechaber of Nishmas. Of David Cohen brings us that Shimon Kippa was Mechaber Nishmas. Why do we say it? And Nishmas, of course, is mentioned, well, according to one Mandi Amr, it's mentioned in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah says by the Leil Seder, you say Hallel. And after Hallel, you finish with what's called Birchas Hashir. So Machlaikas in the Gemara is Birchas Hashir Yahalalucha, what we say at the end of Hallel, or is it Nishmas? So at least, that's why we say both. We say Yahalalucha and Nishmas. But according to that, L'chol HaParchas, you see Nishmas is at least indirectly mentioned in the Mishnah itself as something you say. But Rav David Cohen brings a tradition that the Mechaber was Shimon Kippa. They're the same time. In fact, you know, people don't realize this because Peter, Paul, everyone's, you know, the same. Peter and Paul had a sadistic machlekes in Christianity. No, it's an important machlekes. Peter had the shita that Christians are Jews who are mechuyev in mitzvahs, mechuyev in bris milah, mechuyev in Shabbos, mechuyev in kashrus. If you're a guy that wants to become a Christian, you have to have bris milah and kabbalas mitzvahs. And Peter's shita was that, you know, we believe Yashka is Mashiach, whatever it is, he'll come back from the dead, but we're Yidden. It was Paul that was Mechadesh, that it's separate. Now, Paul and Peter overlapped, but Peter was a direct Talmud of Yashka. Paul was never saw Yashka, so Paul is younger. Now, Paul also claims, who knows if it's true, but maybe this would fit Toldos Yeshu, that he was a Talmud of Rabban Gamliel. Paul says he was a Pharisee, he was of the Prushim, and he was a Talmud of Rabban Gamliel in Yerushalayim, and he even says he was quite successful. Paul says he was learned in the Jewish oral traditions. According to Toldos Yeshua, that would actually be Emes, because he was Mechavim L'Shem Shemayim, but he identifies himself. This is the Rabban Gamliel, just if you want to know which Rabban Gamliel this is the Rabban Gamliel in Yavne. Remember dates. The Bayis Sheni was destroyed by the Romans in the year 70. But afterwards, the Sanhedrin left Yerushalayim, and it went to Yavne. And that's Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. So the Nasi at the time was Rabban Gamliel of Yavne, and that's where Paul says he was a Talmud, right? So you're talking about the year 70. So Yeshka was already killed. Yeshka was killed in around the 30s, 40 years before the Bayis was Necharef. Right, so Paul is after Yeshka's death, but it overlaps with Peter. Okay, little history. It's a fascinating thing to think about, like who was alive at you know, like all these different things, alive during the Tanoim, etc. Okay, how I got onto this, I don't remember. Okay, but we'll stop here. So Rez Hashem will be good. Yom Tov is Manav Kabbalah. Thank you.